And we give our thanks for the gifts. As of this morning, even before offering, $8,000 have been dedicated to that fund, so thank you very much. And our special gratitude for the flowers given today by Doug and Jen Brown in memory of Betty Backendelder. May we use what we have been given wisely and well for the life of this congregation, for our lives, and for all the families of the earth. And our reading this morning is from the author Ellen Bass, and it was selected by Becky Shebley Hall, who is the leader of our lay pastoral care team, a group of folks from our congregation, from you, who provide pastoral presence and listening ear and support to anyone that may need it. So Becky will read the words for us.
The Thing Is, by Ellen Bass. The thing is to love life, to love it even when you have no stomach for it, and everything you've held dear crumbles like burnt paper in your hands, your throat filled with the silt of it. When grief sits with you, its tropical heat thickening the air, heavy as water, more fit for gills than lungs. When grief weighs you like your own flesh, only more of it, an obesity of grief. You think, how can a body withstand this? Then you hold life like a face between your palms, a plain face, no charming smile, no violet eyes, and you say, yes, I will take you. I will love you again.
My son says to me, Dad, what would it be like to go up into space? He asked me this last week as the Space Shuttle Endeavour launched its final mission. And so now I want us to imagine, okay? Imagine we see the space shuttle in the distance. We're driving in a van there. And it's pointing to the sky. And we pull up to the van, we get out, and we go up into the elevator that goes all the way to the top, to the height of the cockpit. And we get out of the elevator, the doors open, and we have to walk across the plank to the shuttle itself. This is scary, right? And then we climb into our bucket seats. And to do that means we have to lay down into them, because remember, it's pointed towards the sky. And our feet are up in the air, and our backs are pressing into the backs of the seats. And there is the feel on our shoulders of the thick straps and the buckles across our shoulders, across our thighs, our waist. And we get locked in, and all we see above us is blue sky. And there's a beep and a beep, and the bridge retracts. And flight control chirps on the radio that all systems are go. And we hear the rockets fire up, and the whole craft is vibrating. And there's the countdown. Would you count with me? 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, liftoff. This is really scary. And now imagine you are not just any astronaut. Your name is Mark Kelly. Your wife is Arizona Representative Gabrielle Giffords. Remember her? Who, with her one side of her body still limp and unmoving from the gunshot wound she received in January, she's below you on the ground. Her one side is limp, and with her other side, her other arm, her good arm, she's waving to you in salute, in victory, in blessing as your rocket lifts off. She went with you from Houston to Florida to see you in this moment, to tell you that she loves you, and she doesn't want to hold you back. Your name is Mark Kelly. And even though all that has happened to you in these last months, you have every reason in the world, you do, to feel cynical about the people in the world, to be fearful, to stay with your wife and not leave the ground, to feel the pull of gravity keeping you there, the pull of grief keeping you there. But your name is Mark Kelly, and despite all of that, you go. And now we are launching into the sky, into the blue atmosphere. It is so deeply blue. But then it begins to fade, fading into dark, and unbelievably, you are now in space. There are so many stars. There are stars beyond stars. There are moons beyond moons. There is dark beyond dark. And now the vibration of the engines begins to ease, and it feels like you are floating in the air. And you are not so scared now. You can begin to relax. And out of the corner of your eye, on the right, what do you see begin to emerge in the window? You see this from a distance. It is sometimes hard, says Mark Kelly in an interview this week. It is hard to understand all the conflict on this beautiful planet. It's so fragile, and it's so beautiful. And then said his colleague in the space station, Katie Coleman, who has been there for 6 months in the space station. She says, "You would think that after these months that I might be tired of this place and this view, but I will tell you it is always changing. During my time up here," she says, "we have had the earthquake and tsunami in Japan, the conflict in Libya, the flooding in the south, the tornadoes. It's hard," Katie says, and now you will know where this sermon is heading. "It is hard to reconcile how life on this planet with the angelic view of the world above can be so hard. I don't want to give it up," she says. This view from above. So the question of this sermon, and really it's a question for the summer, is where do you go to get a view from above? Where do you go to gain perspective? And now I want us to set aside, please, those phrases in our culture that are so ubiquitous. "Oh, she's got her head in the clouds, forget her. Oh, he's got his feet on the ground. He's so grounded. They're such grounded people." I want us to forget those. Because more than being grounded and realistic and feet firmly planted on the earth, I think we are starved, you and I, for the chance to take a step back, to take in something larger than ourselves. But it is so hard. Because instead of a view from above that maybe looks like this one, see that, the beautiful forest? Instead of that view, what we normally have is a view closer to the ground that looks like this. And as you look at that image, I want us to imagine all the objects, all the obstacles, all the trees that block our ability to gain perspective. Maybe it's the job that leaves you too little time. Maybe it's the lack of a job that gives you too much time. Maybe it's the aching body that always is making you feel drained. Maybe you're worried about a lump under the skin. Or the children who we love, who whine at us so we can't hear ourselves think. Maybe that is our forest. Or maybe the loose cannon of a boss that never appreciates you. Or the ding on the brand new car you just bought. It happened to Laura Jensen this week. and the hail. Or let's get real now. Maybe your forest is the depression that you cannot shake. It keeps you feeling boxed in. Or the loss of the sadness that comes from caring for ailing parents and spouses. Or maybe your forest is the gravity of grief keeping us down that weighs you, says our poet, that weighs you like your own flesh, only more of it, an obesity of grief, making you wonder, how can a body withstand this perspective all of the time? How is there another view? How can I get above? So much is holding me back. Now, I've asked this before, this church here, if we notice how when we ask a question or accept the challenge, the universe seems to test us. Does that happen to you? It keeps happening to me. So, when the universe learns this week that I am planning a sermon on taking a view from above, what does it do? First, it sends me this guy. He's driving a Jeep Cherokee, and there's something about Jeep Cherokees that makes bad drivers. I don't know if you've noticed. And I'm commuting by bicycle to church. And now I want us to imagine an angry face underneath the bald head. He's got his brow furrowed, his mouth is open, his teeth are bared, his fist is shaking out the window, right on Sanger Street. And what do? I'm not taking the view from above. I'm back in the forest that we saw. I say, hey man, relax, chill out. I'm just getting to work. Except I don't really say that. I don't use my minister's voice. But then I turn right into church, into the driveway right here, and the first thing I have to do is put this order of service together, including the sermon title of View from Above. And so this is what I try to do with this guy who yelled at me. Instead of an angry face, this is what I try to see. And when I see him here, even now, my own frustrations begin to ease a little. I'm seeing him the way that God sees him, the way the universe sees him. And from above, from the pulpit, and from this image, I can ask, why is he so angry? What, apart from me impeding his path a little, has made him feel this way? And I see this picture of the top of his head, and I think maybe he's had a big fight with his spouse. Maybe he had a big blow up with his teenage son. Maybe this commute to work is killing this man. And seeing him, it's not that I want to let him off from his behavior or make excuses. But from this view, I do try to understand. Because understanding, for me, opens the door to compassion. And acting with compassion means, you know, that I don't just preach this stuff to you. I actually do believe it. And I seek to live the words that say, love is the spirit of this church. Now, the universe is not done with me. Oh, no. What does it do? I don't have slides for this, but this week it sends me Sarah Palin and Mitt Romney and President Obama. What were they doing this week? They were touring our neighborhoods, telling us that the presidential politics is about to begin again. And I'm thinking, I don't have it in me to do this again. Is it really time? And without a view from above, I really worry about me, and I worry about you. Because we absorb all of that noise into our spirit. And I wonder, who will speak for the soul in times of elections and rhetoric and word violence? Who will climb with me toward a higher place and ask how people of faith want to engage with people with whom we disagree? So from this high vantage point today, I am making some promises to myself, and I hope you will join me. I plan to take care of myself. I plan to call a timeout for being a news junkie. I call a timeout from scoring debates like boxing matches. I call a timeout from being a consumer of the politics of polarization with its winners and its losers, its red and its blue. And I ask you to help me, please help me, because it is going to be a very long 17 months. You'd think that would be enough, but the universe, it is still not done with us. Because in a week of trying to get a view from above, it sends us on Wednesday unbelievable weather, tornadoes down the main streets of Springfield and Munson and other towns. And now, taking a view from above takes a whole new meaning, does it not? Because I know you saw with me the photos of whole forests leveled, brick buildings leveled, old homes leveled, steeples leveled. Our own building touched by lightning on Wednesday that fried our organ, our sound system, our phones, our internet, the computer, the fire alarms that are new. And of course, we are lucky. And so with alarms blaring on Thursday, the sermon unwritten, the week's meetings canceled, the building launched back into the 19th century, I ask, what does a larger perspective look like here? Why do we have these places? Can't we just have a tent? What is the point? And in my files, I find this photo. And I see hands on shoulders. I see people leaning on one another. I see heads bowed. I see faces. Let our motorcycle tour pass. In this photo, I see stories. In this photo, I see this church and this faith that is a shelter for us. I see here how it is a home. I see how it is a strength, an inspiration. And from this view from above, I learn it again and again that this image here, more than any building, any steeple, no matter how beautiful or how broken, none of that can describe or tell the story of what faith looks like that does. So this I know, especially this year, that the world is full up with hard stuff, and that we don't have to be an astronaut to find it hard to reconcile the beautiful blue earth we see from above with all the hard things that happen inside. And what is that description we use when our idealism and our hope and our dreams are dashed? What is it that we say sometimes? We say, we are falling back to earth. And this is the image I have in mind when I hear that phrase. Gravity pulling us down. Grief pulling us down. The weight of the world pulling us down. You ever feel this way? Like you're falling? I do. But what if we take a view from above and see this image anew? What if we say, maybe this is not a person falling at all? What if instead we see this as someone who is leaping? And you will ask, where are they leaping to? How are they leaping? And what if I tell you that what I see from above is that this person is making nothing other than a leap of faith, a leap of faith? And what does a leap of faith look like? Well, I think it looks like leaping to love life again, as our poem said. Love life again, despite the life that may not love you back. Love life again, despite the storms, real and metaphor. Love life again, despite the sirens. So these are my last words for us this summer. That this leap toward love, this leap of perspective, this leap of faith is, I think, the task that is awaiting you and me. What does it look like for you to take a view from above? What will you see when you take a step back? And what will it mean for you to hold your life like a beautiful face, or even a plain face, a plain life, and say, yes, I will take you and I will love you again and again and again and again and again. Let us rise and embody your spirit for our closing hymn, Blue Boat Home. It's in the Blue Hymnals 1064.